Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins. Afternoons on the Score.
Chris Myers, he had an assignment, and I'm not really sure if his broadcast partners were as thrilled with his choice of words as they could have been. Let's find out what he has on the sideline regarding an injury.
We saw Jadeveon Clowney leave on that last series. What do you know, Chris Myers?
He indicated to his teammates that he was keeled over in pain. I mean, eye-watering pain, and I don't know how you say this on television. Let's just say he got hit in the family jewels.
Okay, Chris.
All right, Chris.
Yeah, boy.
That was the perfect reaction. Let it breathe for a second. All right, Chris. It sounded so weird from Chris Myers. I don't know why. He's such a straight-laced dude.
A lot more button up. Yeah, you wouldn't expect that.
Let's just say he got hit in the family jewels.
I gotta see if my bits and pieces are still working.
Excuse me?
My wedding tackle.
I'm sorry.
My meat and two veg, my twig and berries.
His boss is going to be okay with that, you suppose? Is any reason for a conversation about using the phrase the family jewels on network television?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
The ball! It's groin! It works at so many levels!
It sounded weird. I mean, family jewels coming out of Chris Myers' mouth sounded very, very odd to me. It did.
Chris Myers going weird science on us. Gain of one.
My nuts, man.
In the family jewels?
The family jewel, man.
Worst pain there is.
Got hit the family jewels.
Lock and load.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
I feel a need to make it abundantly clear after hearing portions of yesterday's conversation and those opening ceremony, that format, my sensibilities never were offended by Chris Myers and his comments about the family jewels. I just felt it was weird from him because he strikes me as a guy, Shep used the phrase button down, I said straight-laced. It just sounded odd. Now, you know him. You've worked with him from time to time, Hubbard, because I have not.
Well, yeah, but I guess beyond that, my reaction is family jewels is the buttoned-up, straight-laced way to say it. He didn't say he got kicked in the nuts. I mean, you know, it's... Well, you can say that on radio.
Can we say that? Did you take that out? No, he didn't take that out. All right. Yeah, let's do it like they do in the gutter on sports radio.
I didn't know you were so straight-laced. Right?
I'm certainly not.
You're getting to be a prude in your old
age? No, I'm a guy who believes that the audience should determine what kind of language it will or will not tolerate. I know you're a fan of SiriusXM. I don't know how much you listen to outside of sports or music on it, but the comedy channels that are available, the Howard Stern type of shows. I am all for freedom of speech, but it's public air, so you can't do it on terrestrial radio. I would submit to you, hey, man, it's 2020. If my audience doesn't want to hear kicked in the nuts, then they won't listen to it. Let them make the decision.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that you got to be really buttoned up to not have hear an expression like that. You know, it's funny because I do listen almost strictly when I'm not listening to the Score to satellite radio now, and it is mostly sports. Although I like the POTUS channel, which goes both ways, guys. Don't start the liberal crap.
Don't open up that bag of snakes again.
No, I mean, that's why I like the POTUS channel. It does swing both ways. And I will listen, occasionally to some of the news channels, but mostly music. I don't really listen to Howard Stern is an interesting guy to me because he always made me uncomfortable. That was always over the top for me. And I'm not a prude, but I'm not, I guess I'm a little
that
conservative.
Upfront?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't want to know about other people's sex lives. I really have no interest in that whatsoever. But he is now revered as one of the great interviewers of all time, and I guess I understand that.
He gets me to listen to interviews I otherwise might not. I mean, I sometimes, whether I'm a Robert Downey, for example, I'm a fan of some Robert Downey films, but mm-hmm. you say, okay, someone's going to interview Robert Downey. I'm not going to sign up for that. I gave it a chance. I was there for 45 minutes of the hour interview or whatever it ran.
I always thought and still think that David Letterman was the best interviewer of my lifetime, and the fact that he holds Stern in such high regard got me over my Stern issues.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Stern issues. Yeah. I love it. The national championship game last night delivered an audience of 25.6 million viewers. That is up just a little bit from 1 year ago. And I thought it would be near a record telecast last night. Don't have that information. Doesn't sound like it if it's only a tick up from last year. But those of us who watched it and endured long commercial breaks, a 33-minute halftime show, more long commercial breaks, stayed with it to the end, saw a very deserving champion in the LSU Tigers. And it's good to see some fresh meat. Now, I know they've been in the title game in recent years, and it's only been 13 years since they've won one. But I think the Alabama fatigue has set in, especially to casual viewers. I mean, give me something new. You had it last night, at least for the short term, and Joe Burrow was absolutely spectacular last night. I don't know how the Bengals screw him up.
Well, I mean, they can. The Bengals have screwed up everything else they've done in the last 20, 30 years, but probably not.
He looks the part so much. I mean, everything he does is magic.
I'm always intrigued by these guys. I mean, we've been Pro Football Weekly, ProFootballWeekly.com. We basically created the independent draft analysis business going back 45 years ago. And the ranking charts have been consistent with the independent folks. Teams tend to do it differently. They use both letter grades, color grades, and they tier them. Whereas, you know, when you go to ProFootballWeekly.com or NFL.com or Matt Miller or whoever it may be, it's pretty much a numbered scale from like it's from 1 to 10, but you never see high sevens and eights. Mm-hmm. And then every once in a while, one of these 8.0s or 8.5s pops up.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Manning was one of those guys. Eli was one of those guys. I'm trying to think. There's been a couple defensive players who were Jadeveon Clowney was one of those guys.
Okay.
Mario Williams was one of those guys. They don't come along often.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys almost never miss. Joe Burrow, I got a hunch, is an 8.0. I mean, I just watching him, I had watched some tape earlier, and we haven't really gotten deep into our draft stuff yet, but because it's the quarterback, and I was curious. And then watching last night, I haven't found the weaknesses yet. I haven't found what you're going to downgrade him for. He's obviously got great leadership ability. His teammates obviously love him. Lawrence was talking about the ball he throws, which is really nice. The release is there, the decision-making. Most of his post-game commentary was discussing kind of game planning and film study and things that they were expecting, what they didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be a lot more of you know, they're going to turn over every rock in the next couple of months. But what we know so far, he looks about as close to a can't-miss quarterback to me as I've seen in a while.
I heard the post-game commentary from the coach. This is Mr. Louisiana, isn't he?
Oh.
Ed Orgeron. He looks and sounds like his face could be a roadmap of the state of Louisiana.
We always say it about Wani. We say it about Bill Cowher. Like, Wani looks like he should have coached Pitt. Cowher looks like a Pittsburgh Steeler coach should look. He just looks like his town. Ed Orgeron is what an LSU Tiger should be.
The thing I love so much about him is what concerns me most for him, and I do not know the answer to this. I'm not suggesting anything. But he had to smoke 4 packs a day to get that voice. I don't know how. I've never heard a voice like that.
Is he a smoker?
I don't know. I don't know that he is.
Ed, all it's taken to get here, all it means to you. How do you manage the challenge of the emotion in coaching this team to a win?
You know, after the first hit, that all goes out. It's about fundamentals, technique, play for 60 minutes. They're a good team. We're a good team. Let's battle.
Appreciate the time.
Go Tigers.
The cut at Orgeron's head came from a punch that he gave himself after a practice to get his guys fired up. He's a unique individual, Kirk.
That's one word for him.
Every time I hear his voice, I picture him climbing down from his 18-wheeler at the Oasis on the tollway. I love that voice. You know,
and a catfish farm.
Yeah, I've never heard a coach like that before. And he's obviously a really good football coach. It was pretty clear he got a bad deal at USC. and really happy that he landed at LSU.
Yeah, terrific victory, terrific career. Eager to see what becomes of Joe Burrow. A lot of people making the case that was the best individual season any college football player has ever had.
I have to tell one texter, the texter says, I think he just yelled himself hoarse. No, he sounds that way all the time. You can get him in May sitting on the set at ESPN.
Yes.
That is his voice.
He's gravelly. Yeah, he might have a permanently semi-paralyzed vocal cord, and he struggles to get air out, so he's got to kind of bring it from down here. Shep, is he the best college player of all time for one season?
I mean, that's the best season. Tell me a better season. Cam Newton was, he didn't have as much help around him when he did what he did at Auburn, which made that incredibly impressive because I don't think he threw a pass to anyone that ever made a reception in the NFL, which makes what he did leading Auburn to a national championship insane. And plus he ran for how many, like over 1,000 yards that year. So that was incredible. But just it's,
I don't know how far back we get to go. Archie Griffin.
As far back as you want. Well, that's the great thing about having you here.
Yeah, Archie Griffin is in the conversation. You know, the back-to-back Heismans, the dominating it from the running back position. Obviously, the quarterback is going to be more of an impact on the team overall. But for those 2 years, Archie Griffin was something that football had never seen. Now that I've gone all the way back to what the late 60s,
74, 75 is when Archie copped those. So, yeah, that was my entry into being a college football fan. Now, was Archie voted the number one player in college football history in what they did last night?
Yeah, in their 35-minute halftime show, they unveiled 11 through 1, and no, Archie came in actually at number 4.
Oh, number 4.
They voted Jim Brown the number one college player of all time.
Jim Brown.
Which I
are you old enough to remember Jim Brown in
college?
Well,
I mean, what people forget, he was an All-American
at Syracuse.
I think it was field hockey, not lacrosse. It was one or the other. And yes, he was great. But those games weren't on TV in those days. I mean, all I know is the stats, to be honest with you.
I struggle with those, that conceptually, just because so few people can relate. Now, if it's the right answer, it's the right answer and make a case for it. But where are we going to get the evidence on it?
I mean, you can vote Jim Brown the greatest NFL player of all time because of the average yards per game and the average yards per carry. And then if you've just watched him play. I don't know enough about what he did at Syracuse. Matter of fact, I think some people thought Ernie Davis was better.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
The list they had last night, the problem I had with it was, one, your most recent player is Barry Sanders. Are you just going to completely tell me that Vince Young was absolutely insane as a collegiate player?
Tim Tebow was a great college player.
Tim Tebow was incredibly great as a collegiate player. I mean, leading Florida to multiple national championships, winning a Heisman Trophy. You mean to tell me that nobody in the last 25, 30 years is worthy of being on that top 11?
Who picked this?
It's ESPN. I don't know the exact voters on it. From 51 colleges and universities is who they ended up taking, but it was just a compilation of ESPN writers and workers.
Well, guys, I mean, we now know it was the juice, but I'm not so sure Tony Mandarich wasn't the most dominant college football player I've ever seen.
Tony Mandarich was a monster.
I mean, Bubba Smith was incredible.
Yes, I don't remember Bubba as a Michigan State Spartan, but I know of the legend both in East Lansing, and I remember watching his NFL career. There are defensive players I would think of. Shane Conlon at Penn State in the mid-80s, they won a share of a national championship. Charles Woodson at Michigan in 98 was 97 was one of the best.
The first defensive Heisman winner.
Yes, and he had to return kicks and punts to do it, unfortunately.
But I guess the other problem I have with it is in their top 10, 9 guys are running backs. And I know that part of what I've liked about college football.
So right there, the list loses all credibility.
It does with Danny Parkins.
It does with me, too. I mean, can't tell me 9 of the 10 best were running backs. That doesn't make it.
No,
it
doesn't.
At the other positions?
You can.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, Orlando Pace to me. You can't have a more dominant college football player than, growing up watching him. It's okay. Give the ball to Eddie George, and here's 12 yards because no one is going to walk in front of this guy.
That 95 Ohio State team was awesome, and Orlando Pace was a huge part of it. You're right.
And it's it didn't have to be a quarterback to make your team great, but it doesn't have to be a running back either.
I'll tell you who probably belongs on the list is Julio Jones. There was no question coming out of Bama that he was going to be who he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Archie Griffin, for me, as much as I loved watching him play, and that's, I remember more of pro football in the late 60s and early 70s than I do college football for some reason, but watching Archie was a trip. But It was the Big Two. It was your alma mater, and it was Ohio State, and they only played 10 or 11 games in that era, so there was no competition unless they were playing the Skunks.
But college football was more like that. The SEC wasn't the SEC in those days either. I mean, it's a different game, you know, different time. But I'm with Shep on this. I mean, you can't tell me that nobody on that list before Burrow in the last 25 years, that just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, players have gotten better, not worse, you know, if you think about it, just with the training and the athleticism and everything else.
We've given you a bunch of 21st century names. Those guys should be on here. Here's some more. Christian McCaffrey.
I still think he got robbed of a Heisman.
Maybe.
Derrick Henry won it, I think, the year that he did, but it's... I guess Derrick Henry doesn't exactly look like a bad pick at this point, but Christian McCaffrey's year at Stanford was unstoppable.
So Peyton Manning wasn't on the list?
Well, he's on here. It's just they unveiled the top 11 last night.
Well, if he's not in the top 11, it's still not the right list.
I mean, right. I agree with you. I'm going down to see the last player. The highest rated player, at least, that played in the 90s or since then, and I'm in the 20s now, Peyton Manning, 1994 to 97, number 21 is your highest ranked person in the last 30 years.
The problem with these lists, you need to break them down positionally to have an intelligent conversation, don't you? Don't you have to have a conversation, quarterbacks, running backs, other?
You would
maybe
think. I mean, unless this list is just running backs 1 through 10,
it sure
pretty
is
much what you told you.
Right, and I mean, there are a lot of college running backs I love watching play, man. Bo Jackson was a hoot. Herschel Walker was a fun running back to watch at the college. There have been running backs, but you got to separate them positionally to have it make any sense.
Well, and apparently Roger Staubach was number 11.
Yes.
I love Roger Staubach. I get the whole Navy thing. He's a hero. Again, I'm not saying anything negative about Roger Staubach. He did not dominate college football anywhere near the way that Peyton Manning or Ryan Leaf did. I mean, you know, some of this just, I don't get what they were
what
doing.
Was, what would the Naval, do they throw a lot or were they a running? I mean, he won the Heisman Trophy there.
Yeah, he won it, but I don't remember, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, a lot of this stuff that I was alive for, please keep in mind, I was 5 or 6 years old. It's not like I was writing for the Sun-Times at the time. You know?
The Daily American.
Roger Staubach between 62 and 64 for Navy, 3,571 passing yards, 35 touchdowns, 682 rushing yards. So
over a three-year stretch.
Not Peyton even Manning, 1,200 yards a year.
Yeah, Peyton Manning outdid his career numbers every year he was at Tennessee.
That's what we're talking about. Yeah, different eras. All right, baseball, modern day, coming up with Dan Plesac in a couple of minutes on Sports Radio 670.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The Score.
So how many Plesiacs are here today?
If any Plesiacs on their earth, they're here today.
Plesiacs were wild when Zach Plesiac pitched on the south side this past summer. Bottom of the hour on The Score, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves? It comes with a $5,000 signing bonus. Go to chicagowolves.com/sprint to learn how to win the Sprint Power Play payday. You can follow Dan Plesiak on Twitter at Plesiak19. Hey, 19. Love that Steely Dan riff. We had him on earlier today. First question I asked Zach, who is in baseball's top 10 in career appearances. Do you think when the commissioner came down on the Astros yesterday, exceeded your expectations for the hammer?
Yes, because, you know, most of the time, Dan, I don't think, even unless you were really on the inner circle of what was going on, that anyone in baseball really had any idea the magnitude and the length that the Astros went to try to gain a competitive edge. And if you look at the numbers, home versus the road, postseason, regular season, it's astounding. And you know what it does, Dan? It screams like we're in a world of technology. We're in a world of trying to get things in real time. And more front offices, and it's not just in baseball. It's in football. It's in basketball. It's in college sports, where you have these young, bright minds that are trying to get every competitive edge that you can possibly have. And I'm sure at the time in 2017, baseball didn't really think that, hey, maybe they would be using the replay monitors or the real-time monitors to be able to decipher codes. That would be simply like an opposing team being able to have access to, you know, what has been plugged into a quarterback's mind from the sideline about play calling. It's like it's having the answers, Dan, to the test, because if you have a good idea, and baseball has changed from when you and I and Hub remember the game of baseball, it's about velocity, it's about spin rate, it's about giving me guys that throw 98 to 100. There's no way that you can cover a 98-mile-an-hour fastball and hit the hard curveball or breaking ball that guys are throwing now today. But if you know you have a really good chance of what's coming, Dan, there was a guy, Tyler Glasnow, last year in the postseason against the Astros, and this had nothing to do with stealing signs. He was tipping pitches really bad. He would take his hands close to above his head when he was throwing a fastball and kept his glove lower to his chest when he was throwing a breaking ball. And after like two batters, it was plain as day. And the Astros swung and missed at a guy that there aren't five guys in baseball that throw as well as this guy does. There were two swings and misses in three innings. So if you know what's coming, you've got a much better chance to know what you're aiming at and how to hit it.
Dan, the part I struggle with before I even get to the right and wrong, obviously it's wrong, I mean it's cheating, is that from the time that the pitcher actually has his sign or accepts his sign, he's got, what, 1.5, 2 seconds to maybe 4 or 5 seconds before that ball is delivered. In this process of stealing the sign and getting the information to the hitter, wouldn't it almost be a distraction for some guys?
It would, but it could. But then if you understand the reality of what they were doing in real time, right? So the banging of a bat on the dugout in on a garbage can, right? So you have somebody that's right near the clubhouse, right? Mm-hmm. Basically near the on-deck circle, relaying to a coach, fastball, and whatever it means. If you hit the garbage can, that, you know, a fastball is coming. So, you know, it's quiet in between pitches. And so you're in the batter's box, and you can hear that pounding of a garbage can. So you know that one or the other. If you're hitting the garbage can and it's a fastball, and the thing that makes this just so hard to detect, Hub, is because it was in real time. Mm-hmm. This wasn't on like a 5 or 6 second delay. This was off of the monitor that they were getting off the feed from New York, the instant replay monitor. And there's one monitor that just hovers right around, you know, the fingers going down from the catcher. So in real time, a guy standing there watching the monitor relays a message to a coach. Somebody stands there and hits a bat against a garbage can. You know before that pitch is thrown, what pretty good chance what pitch is coming.
Danny, it would be naive to think it's just the Astros, just the Red Sox. How widespread is in your estimation, how widespread is electronic cheating?
Dan, I don't really know. It wouldn't be accurate for me. I'm with you. I don't think it was just the Red Sox or the Astros. I would say it would be. I don't even know. I don't know to put a really number on. I would say several. How many is that? I don't know. I know that some teams do it correctly, but I will say this. It is also added to why these games are taking so long to play. A three-hour game, a three-hour and 20-minute game, and a 3-2 game. Dan, if you'll watch the next White Sox game. Now, this may all slow down now, but multiple signs with nobody on base, the first hitter of the game, catchers are paranoid, pitchers are paranoid, hitters are paranoid. So, listen, it was going around the league. What teams are, what teams aren't, what ballparks you have to be careful of. And for the young White Sox pitcher, Danny Farquhar, a guy that goes to camp every year and he's battling to make a job, goes to Houston, pitches against the Astros, he's getting knocked around the ballpark, and he knew what was going on. And you know what's funny about it? Mike Fiers, I'm sure, 48 hours ago, Dan, I'm going to tell you this, and I can tell you this from experience. There is a wall that is in baseball, and it will be there for as long as there's baseball. On one side of the wall are pitchers. On the other side of the wall are position players. Position players think pitchers have it easy. They get out of spring training early. They go play golf at noon. They're not the real players. We're out here grinding. And I can guarantee you that Mike Fiers, 48 hours ago, was looked at by a big part of the community of position players as he sold out, and he sold out the code. And I'm sure there were a boatload of pitchers that were going, amen for Mike Fiers for having the guts to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan, listen, I'm all for, if you want to give me a competitive edge, and I'm watching you and you're a pitcher, and you do something in your delivery that I have a pretty good idea what you're doing, that's on you, and to me, that's fair game. And that's always been fair game. But when you're using real-time cameras and technology, and you're relaying pitches, Dan, that crosses the line.
Three times an American League All-Star, Danny Plesac, joined us during the 2 o'clock hour today to talk about the baseball cheating scandal, and still nothing today from the commissioner's office. No new rumors to report. I'm sure that Alex Cora is shaking in anticipation of what many are expecting to be possibly, maybe even likely, some people have suggested, a lifetime ban from baseball for his involvement both with the Astros and with the Boston Red Sox. So that's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out.
I have not followed this as closely because of the playoffs and everything. Was it common knowledge before Lunau threw him under the bus that Cora was blamed for all this in Houston?
I don't remember it as that. Tanny, did you remember?
It was largely in the report that MLB had released that Cora, that's what really implicated him.
Okay. All right. Well, he's going to swing. And there could be more coming. I hope it's not local. That would be my wish. I would be disappointed in my team if they took part in it. I would. And I wasn't one of those who jumped up and down and cried about steroids years ago. Baseball wasn't governing it. Now, they weren't doing a very good job governing this either. But I'd be disappointed. I'd be disappointed if it went on for a long period of time and there wasn't one stand-up guy in the clubhouse who could make a case for what's ethical and what's cheating.
You know, the thing that I had for a long time with steroids is that there was no written rule against steroids.
Right.
You know, during, not in 98 when McGuire and Sosa went nuts. I think at some point after they wrote something. Is there a written rule in baseball against stealing signs?
There's electronics, right? Electronics, yes. I believe there's a lot of...
Morosi yesterday kind of went into detail on that of after the flare-up with the Red Sox a few years ago, there was no punishment dealt out, but said, don't use any technology in order to coordinate this and work through that.
Yeah, technology. Whether the word was technology or electronics, I can't remember, but there has been language added.
I know I heard somebody talking today about it supposedly being common knowledge that back in the 50s when Bobby Thompson hit the home run, heard around the world, that the Giants had been stealing signs all that year and that everybody knew.
Mm-hmm.
The attitude was, well, you're better than everybody else at it. You got away with it, so good for you, you know? And so
right.
I think that that's what people try to sell when they ask about whether it's actually against the rules or not. I did, go, and this is, again, being kind of a nutty Cubs fan, and I didn't realize that Sammy was kind of the asshat that he turned out to be, and I was a big Sosa guy. Once the corked bat popped up, then I had enough. But, with the steroid, my attitude was kind of, well, if it's not against the rules and everybody is doing it, why are we making such a big deal out of this, you know? And,
right. Baseball turned its cheek because baseball needed to make amends with its consumers, and they thought home runs would do it. A lot of people were threatening to never watch another game after the 94 strike.
Home runs did do it. I mean, 98 is what turned the corner.
Absolutely, so, brought people back. That was a glorious summer, and especially locally, because we had a guy involved, and the race with McGuire was legendary. And how those of us who were behind these microphones at the time didn't scratch our heads and say, what's up with this? This is kind of weird. Brady Anderson of the Orioles, Brady Anderson's hitting 50 home runs. Something isn't quite right here. Who's the actor? Luis Gonzalez? Did he have a 45 or a 50 home run season?
He might hit a 50 spot.
Yeah. I mean,
the year they won it all.
And we just applauded. But the cork bat, though. Perish the thought of that. Sammy being an asshat. Sammy was the only reason to go to ballpark for a handful of years, though, despite what kind of an asshat he was
and
how it ended.
And again, I mean, I talk about it in the air a lot. I mean, I've been a season ticket holder my whole life, you know, and kind of, you know, a fanatic Cubs fan. And Sosa, you know, again, we were asking the question an hour or two ago about the whole social reaction with all this of why – you know, so many people who claim to love the Bears hate the Bears, you know, and yet the Cubs, after failing for 100 years, you never had that. You just, you glommed onto what you could get, you know.
Right.
And Sammy was what you could get for about 5, 6, 7 years there.
Yes, and over a two-year stretch, the Cubs lost more games. What was the stat? 99-2000. 99 and 2000, I believe it was, or maybe it was 2001. The two-year stretch where they set a record for most cumulative losses over a two-year period, they since broke it, and attendance. While you're losing a record number of games over a two-year stretch, you're setting a record at Wrigley Field. And the reason is Sammy Sosa. The end of story. There was no one else bringing people out there. Cubs get shelled 7-4. Who cares? Sammy hit one 450 feet.
And I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, regardless of whether it's steroids or cork or just whatever. To this day, he's the only guy in Major League Baseball history to have 360 homer seasons, isn't he?
I think so. Shep, yeah. Is that right?
Yep. If nothing else, it's the only one to do it 3 years in a row for certain.
I think he's the only one to do it three times, period.
And that guy went out there every year and gave you 158, 160, 161 games, 150. Every year he went out there and played. Be caller 12 right now to the Scores Contest line at 312-591-6700, and you'll win a pair of passes to the Cubs convention this weekend at Sheraton Grand Chicago. It's happening this Friday through Sunday. If you'd like more information and to purchase tickets, visit Cubs.com/convention. Parkins and I will be broadcasting from Cubs convention this coming Friday. The Score will be out there, a bunch of shows on Saturday and Sunday. So if you're going to the Cubs convention, we'll be easy to find. We'll be the annoying guys in ill-fitting clothes with bad skin and a lot of bad takes on sports. But stop by and say hello. What's that?
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
There'll be plenty of those at the Cubs convention, I would assume.
We'll see. Yes. What are you saying? How do you distinguish us from everybody else there?
We'll be fitting in with the crowd.
Yeah. Okay. Go see Shep on Sunday. You're working with Anthony Heron Sunday, right?
Yes, sir.
Nice. Nicely
done.
You
know, at any moment, some big play could happen.
Some big play could happen at any moment. Mark Grody is going to hang out with us for a few minutes in just a little bit. He follows our show. Hub Arkish, nice enough to come in for Danny Parkins. Danny's back tomorrow. I'm Mac, and you've got the Score.
Unlock me! Unlock me!
So, man, we get to unlock every now and again. Moby Dick in a goldfish bowl. Mark Grody, veteran Score reporter, Bears sideline man on BBM. You're following us at 6 o'clock tonight. How you doing, man? It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you guys, Hub and McNeil. Listen to you guys a little bit today, and it's a great hardcore football grouping, you two. I love it.
Did you enjoy me getting roasted for not hating the Bears enough?
Oh my God, I heard that call.
Like, you can't win, Hub. You either hate them too much or you don't hate them enough, right? Over the years?
I don't care about that, and I absolutely get Bears fans' frustrations. But every time I look at Twitter, the vitriol, I mean, the hate, the you know, it's got to be wrong because the Bears did it. You know, it's over the top, as near as I can tell.
The crescendo on that call was just wonderful because there was an even keel to it. Like, I think if I remember correctly, it started off something like, Hub, I like you, but that's crap!
No.
Hub mouthed the butt part coming to me.
He was very pleasant and built to the that's crap, and while he was being pleasant, I'm sitting here looking over at him going,
But
we knew the butt was coming. I just didn't know it was going to be that big a butt.
I don't think I've ever heard that much of a difference in actual tone from the, hey, I really love your show and you're great. But that's horrible. You're an idiot.
You know what? I've had a blast today doing football. I did a lot of football and some baseball too. And I try to always think of a positive or two when you drive home. Always have some things that really make you feel good about what you did. That call will be one of those things I reflect upon with fondness when I get on the Dan Ryan a little bit later on tonight.
Yeah, Danny Rara. That is some enthusiasm.
Bears right training camp changes this year, Mark Grody. No more exit 315 down 394, or I'm sorry, 57. The Bears will be in Lake Forest for the first time since the early 80s.
Well, the first thing you think about it is that this probably is... For fans who don't like it, and I totally get it if fans don't like it because the accessibility in Bourbonnais was excellent, and there would be 8,000 to 10,000 fans when they would allow fans in. I don't know if they will have that kind of capacity.
Well, they don't.
In
you
Lake
know
Forest.
They
won't have that kind of capacity in Lake Forest. But Bears fans should know this, that it is going to be better for the players because of logistically and everything that they need is right there for them. I'm not sure where the players – I assume the players will get to go to wherever they stay in Lake Forest, or maybe there'll be a hotel.
It's in Vernon Hills, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that are going to be better for the players. So if there's any solace in that, there is that part. However – I enjoyed going to Bourbonnais. You know, I only did it.
Yeah, it was camp.
Yeah, it was camp.
Hub and I reflect with nothing but fondness for Platteville, Wisconsin. It was a drive, and you were committed to it. You're pot committed for the week.
It's bittersweet. You know, it's one of those things that it's a change in the game, and you got to accept change. And you know, I never liked Bourbonnais as much as Platteville, but I came to enjoy some things about Bourbonnais, and I will miss going there. But as you saw when you came in, I was doing a little survey here during the last break. The Bears were one of only 11 teams that was left that was still going camping. Last year, 21 of the 32 NFL teams worked out at their own facilities, and this has been a trend that's been developing in recent years, and the Bears are joining what other teams seem to think is the best way to go.
I guess it makes sense. It's easier.
Well, one of the reasons it makes sense, I don't mean to interrupt you, is because most will tell you that they do now have the best facility in the NFL. I mean, what they did, you said you haven't been up there in a year?
Right.
Oh, you got to get up there.
Couple years,
yeah. I mean, what they did up there is really, for all you Bears fans who think the Bears can do nothing right, maybe they can't do anything right on the field.
They build a
but
hell
what
of a
they did with this facility.
I love you, Hub, but you're an idiot.
Yeah. I mean, the facility is really impressive. They pumped a fortune into it.
They should have done that with a stadium.
Now we know part of what their motivation was and part of what they were thinking when they did it.
Yeah, and as, you know, little by little they would start to build on, then we would see an extra auxiliary parking lot added on. Many of us in the media were like, it's going to happen. Like, there will be camp here, but when is it going to happen? I did not think it was going to happen before the contract ended. I figured they would stay in Bourbonnais for a couple more years.
Yeah, they pulled up stakes 3 years before expiration.
Yeah, I mean, nobody saw this coming. I mean, I was shocked by the news today. Not shocked that they did it, but shocked that they did it now.
Bears fan, so. Bears flags flying at half staff in Kankakee County today. Grody, what turned you on divisional play weekend? What was your favorite game, your favorite moment, your favorite player? What do you remember most about this past Saturday and Sunday in the NFL?
I have to admit that I have been now for a little while having to eat crow on the Green Bay Packers because I didn't think that they were a legitimate postseason team. I thought that the one game that changed that for me a little bit was the Monday night game against Minnesota, where they were just awesome. And then to win the game against Seattle, like they did. I mean, it's not shocking that they won because it was at home and you have a banged up Seattle team. But I guess that Green Bay team probably impressed me or surprised me the most. I mean, obviously, what happened in the Houston-Kansas City game, I mean, that's the most interesting game.
It's the most bizarre playoff game I've ever witnessed. I can't remember. The first half, I should say, the first half of that game was as crazy as anything, Hub, I've ever seen on a football field in the playoffs. I've never seen that.
Never saw it coming, and I still think that maybe Bill O'Brien should have been fired on the sideline for that fake punt.
I got to tell you. Like I said on Twitter, everybody is right about what they said, but I kind of liked it because if it would have worked, that could have put the game away. That's a big old if at you right there.
I've heard several people try to posit that. If they came from behind from 24 to nothing, 28 to nothing, it's going to make a difference.
I love the call, and I know it was stupid. So, does that make sense? No, it doesn't.
So look what did happen. It was 24-0. The Chiefs go in for their first touchdown on a 33-yard field, and on the ensuing kickoff, the returner fumbles it. They go in on a 14-yard field, and suddenly you're leading by 10 points.
Special team sucks. Let's get down to Jay Feely again. Jay? Former Bears kicker.
Yes. What's coming up tonight on the Mark Grody Experience?
We are going to talk more about the Bears and Bourbonnais and Lake Forest, and we'll turn that into some more talk about the coordinators. I do want to get into baseball and some more discipline that I think needs to be taken care of in Major League Baseball.
Okay, sounds cool. Appreciate that. I'll be listening on my commute.
Thanks, Mac. I appreciate it. Hub, good to see you.
I'll be listening as well.
Good to see you, Hub. This is great. Thanks, guys.
And to be completely forthright, it's because I haven't called SiriusXM to renew my subscription. My six months of free are up, and I still haven't called. I'm stuck with you.
I'll do whatever it takes to get you guys to listen. If that's what it takes, Bears.
I have my Sirius, but I can do the Beatles channel all night long. I want a little Grody before I get home.
Whatever.
Thanks for coming in, Hub. Appreciate it.
Oh, always fun.
Parkin's back tomorrow, thanking our executive producer. Job well done, Nick Shepkowski. Chris Tannehill is the surgeon of sound. Danny Plesak, MLB Network, with us today. Thank you for calling. Thank you for texting. Most importantly, thank you for listening. I'm Danny Mac, and I'm Taillights. Back tomorrow at 2. Good night.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.